Hey, Clay Schroff with Voice of the Lion, and we are here with Cheryl Saavedra. Now, listen, my wife had Cheryl on her podcast, Run Mama Run, about a year ago.
About a year ago, yes.
And it's an incredible interview. I will post links below letting you listen to that. But we're going to take this in a new direction. I'm going to give a brief on Cheryl, and then she's going to make all the corrections necessary to all the mess-ups I did. But Cheryl came from a really dark place in life where she was actually put in the foster care. And we're going to go a little bit deeper into that. Okay. But the main story of that is you are an ultra-successful attorney now and living the best life and getting ready to start traveling the world.
Yes, we've been traveling the world quite a bit already, which is a new experience for me coming from the background that I came from. But, you know, the world is my oyster, frankly.
That is awesome. Yes. And, you know, we live in a day and an age when you hear the bad news. You know, a lot of people live in a dark time in their life. And what we really want to highlight is just because you find yourself in a dark place now, you find yourself in a valley, there are ways that people have climbed out, such as yourself, and have not only made a great career for yourself, found and put yourself in a happier place and joyful place, but you're also still reaching out and helping others. Can you touch on where you came from? Go okay. as deep as you want. Because what I want our listeners to know is no matter where you're at, right, life isn't always a dream. Sometimes it's an absolute nightmare. But if you can make it through the nightmare, you can turn your life into a dream.
Okay. Well, I am the youngest of five children. My mother comes from a farming background from Monsanto, New Mexico, and my father came from a Southern Baptist background. They met under very auspicious circumstances. My mother was a bartender, and the situation was my oldest sister died when I was seven, and my family really took an extreme journey into the depths of poverty and trauma and grief. And my mother was just not able to survive that. She had put my oldest sister, in foster care. I'm originally from Roswell, New Mexico, which is a very conservative community. And my mother felt that my sister was not behaving properly according to the standards, put her in foster care. And so of the five of us, she was the first to go into foster care, and she died in foster care.
Oh, my goodness.
She was pregnant. She ended up with a very complicated pregnancy that killed both her and the child. And so from there, I was six, almost seven at the time, and my family simply just never recovered. They never recovered from that. My parents were divorced when I was a year, so I didn't actually develop a relationship with my father until I was 12, when he appeared out of nowhere, found us in foster care, took us for the summer, and decided that we were beyond
more
his capability. Yes.
Yeah.
And so sent us back. I ended up living in what is called relative foster care with a cousin of my mother's, and lived there till I was about 14. They decided it was too much for them as well. So they put me on a Greyhound bus and sent me to my mother, whom I had not seen since I was about 10, not seen or heard from since I was about 10. She had not recovered. So I found myself living on my own at age 14 in the big city of Denver, Colorado.
Yep.
Which, when I arrived in Denver coming from Roswell, New Mexico, it was the most amazing community I had never seen. I had never seen buildings that tall.
I come from a little town in Montana. Albuquerque's big time for me.
Yes, absolutely. Well, the tallest building in Roswell at the time, I think, is 12 stories. And I think the minimum building in Denver is 12 stories.
Right.
So it was very daunting. My sister was already there. My brother was already there. They actually managed to find my mother. She had been missing for several years, and so they were on the run. for many years until they found her, and that's how I ended up in Denver. So just the three of us, we did what we could. I hate to say it now, but, you know, we did the traditional lie, cheat, and steal.
Sure.
Just to survive.
Survival.
My first job was at Wendy's. My sister is 2 years older than I am, and she lied and told them that we were twins. That's why I didn't have a birth certificate or a Social Security card, although I knew my Social Security number. And so my Social Security record actually shows earned income from the age of 14.
That is crazy.
So I managed to make it through high school living on my own and, like I said, just lying, cheating, and stealing my way through writing permission slips. I would make up stories that my mother was disabled. That's why she couldn't come to school. But remarkably, I was a straight-A student.
See, now that didn't just come easy. You definitely had to concentrate and make some decisions, I'm assuming.
Well, I knew that if I wanted a different life, that it was going to be up to me, that I was going to be able to rely on anybody. So I knew that the easy way to do that was to get good grades. I mean, I'd seen that beginning in elementary school, sort of the thing that set me apart was that I did well academically. And so I knew that if I continued to do well academically, that I could set myself apart. Because I had no other mechanism in which to do that. I didn't have a family. I wasn't good at sports. I didn't have a good social system. But my academics, I was in control of. So I just found ways to utilize what I was good at.
Now, did you have any teachers or anyone that came alongside you to help you through that time?
In high school, I did. I'm sure I did in elementary school and middle school, but significantly in high school, when I got to about the 11th grade, I got picked up by CYFD. Mm. They discovered that I was living on my own, and a high school counselor of mine, which I wish I could find to this day, he offered to take care of me. Mm. I'm sorry.
This is good.
He had a sister that worked for the U.S. Attorney General's office at the time. And so he went to CYFD and he said, I'll be her guardian and I'll be her conservator. Because I was in the mentorship program. I was in the honor roll program. I had straight A's in high school. And so I was working three jobs at the time. I was working at Target. I was working at Haagen-Dazs and I was working for a real estate company. Selling timeshares in order to be able to pay my rent by myself. So they got me a job at the U.S. Attorney General's office, and I went from making like $3.25 an hour to, I think, $17 an hour. So he really sort of brought me out of that situation of hiding and trauma, because I didn't have to hide anymore because I had somebody watching over me. And he watched me all the way through high school. Part of the program that I entered into with CYFD was that I would join the Upward Bound program.
Mm.
And so they put sort of...
Tell us what that is.
So the Upward Bound program is a first-generation college program for children who demonstrate the ability to earn higher education but do not have the means. So I graduated from the Upward Bound program. I earned all my undergraduate, all my preliminary subjects the summer before I actually entered undergrad. I clept out of a number of prerequisite courses. They helped me apply for scholarships. They helped me apply for financial aid. They helped me do all the things to get to college. Because at the time, when I was 17 and in high school, the only thing that I was concerned about was, how am I going to pay my rent? How am I going to get to school? How am I going to get to my job? I had no concept of who or what I needed to be beyond 17 years old. And so the Upward Bound program actually gave me a future. It gave me the opportunity for a future. And Mr. Hodges, he watched over me until I graduated from high school. And he was just a godsend for me. I went to undergrad. I finished straight in 4 years. I ended up working for the Upward Bound program. I knew that I wanted to go to law school. And I was waiting for a girlfriend of mine because we were going to go together. She didn't end up going, but I worked for the Upward Bound program right after undergrad. And it was the best experience of my life. It was at that point that I decided that I wanted to work with children for the rest of my life.
Yep.
So at one point during my work with the Upward Bound and Talent Search program, I decided that the message that I was giving those students was that you have the ability to do whatever you want. The only limitation is the limitation that you place on yourself.
Mm, that is so good.
So I decided that I needed to listen to my own words. I quit my job. I applied for law school, and I came home to New Mexico and attended UNM.
And look at you now.
Look at me now.
So, you know, just some things I want to bring up to our listeners. You know, early in your life, if your mom would have sought professional help earlier, or things might have been different. If the community around you would have circled and provided help then, things might have been different. But it wasn't until later that somebody came and actually formed a protection and a guidance for you.
Well, I think it was a generational trauma. Mm-hmm. I know it is easy for me. It would have been easy for me to blame my mother, but I don't. I consider her to be as much a victim of her childhood as my childhood, because that trauma is generational. And it takes someone who is brave enough to break that generational trauma in order for subsequent generations to not have to suffer the same pain and painful history. And she didn't have that strength. But I don't blame her for not having that strength. I'm sure that she absolutely suffered in her own life. I don't know significantly her trauma because I didn't have a relationship with her.
People don't share that trauma very easily either.
They don't. They do now. And I think they do now because it's healing, and it teaches people that you have the ability to overcome that. Part of my work with Upward Bound is I began speaking to Upward Bound classes, and I would sort of tell them the whole story about the just incredibly traumatic experiences that we endured as children. I mean, everything from hiding in a trash can for 2 days to being completely homeless for a period of time. And so I developed this speech early on in my postgraduate years called Who Am I? And the concept of the speech is that you can look at me today in my life, in my suit, with my watch and my briefcase and my office, and you would never know that I lived in a trash can for 2 days. Because I have the ability to project to the community what I want them to see. And everybody suffers some trauma in their life. There is nobody that lives without pain or injury or grief. Your parent died. Your father's an alcoholic. Your grandparents passed away. Your dad lost his job. Something happens that creates a trauma event for you. So the people who survive are not the people that have the variation in the trauma, the really bad trauma versus the expected trauma. It's the people who live beyond the trauma. So I used to give speeches to Upward Bound students, Talent Search students, students in first generation type programs that would say, you get to decide. You get to decide what your life looks like. And if you are able to identify what your trauma is, you are able to overcome it.
you know, I find that most people who come out of dark places, right, the tough, tough stuff, who make a decision not to no longer be a victim, are much stronger than the person born and kept in the little palace that they lived in. In life, their character, even their ability to enjoy life itself seems to stem from a lot of people who were once broken, who have been able to mend, or now they're scarred and they're no longer wounded. And I know for my wife, like, right, we'll work with the special victims unit,
right,
and we go into a home, and it's a home that my wife would have loved to have lived in. And they look at my wife like, you're just this rich white lady, what do you know? And because they're judging her, not knowing her past.
That's right.
And but it gives her, and I know it gives you, a sense of strength and of a foundation that you can truly help people. Because number one, they can't BS you. You know, that excuse you're giving me, I lived through it. I conquered that.
I can do this all day.
I can do this all day.
Yeah. Well, it was significant for me because I think there was a period of time in my life where I was not willing to acknowledge my childhood. I was not willing to acknowledge my background because I didn't want people to treat me differently. I didn't want people to feel sorry for me. And so I was very, very private about who I was and where I came from.
Sure.
And probably when I hit about 30, I decided...
Last year?
Yes, significantly. I decided that it was, and I'm not sure how strong your faith is, but I decided that that God had given me a gift, and it was a slap in the face if I didn't recognize that gift and share it. So that's when I started giving those speeches, and that's when I started concentrating my practice on serving children in the world. My undergraduate degree is in journalism, not ever because I intended to be a journalist, but because when I was working at the U.S. Attorney General's office at the time, one of the attorneys there said, get an undergraduate degree in something you can get a job in, because I know you're going to make it to law school, but in case you don't, make sure that you
have plan B,
right, some place to work. So luckily for me, all the cards fell into place and I was able to make it through law school. But I was very definitive about the whole time that I wanted to work with children. I wanted to serve children. So I'm a family law lawyer. I do divorce, custody, high conflict custody cases. And the greatest aspect of my practice is that I'm a guardian ad litem. I serve children in divorce and custody, kinship, guardianship cases. There's even a few cases in which I manage money for children that have received wrongful death settlements. And I intend to live my life in that capacity until I die. Because there is nothing more important to me than giving back to a community that was as helpless as I was at the time. And it really did just take that one person. So if I can be that one person.
I think you've been that one person many, many times. You know, how we met you is you have a crazy husband who represented us in court while we were going through our foster care system. Mm-hmm. And one thing I say about Hal is that he is a bulldog and never backs down when it comes to the good of a child.
Right.
Period.
Absolutely.
At close to the cost of career. And what I also know is that he wouldn't be with someone who wasn't like-minded. So I'm pretty excited to see where our futures go with this. And so tell us about the book you're going to write.
Well, my husband insists that, you know, part of my obligation is that I need to perpetuate the story in terms of putting it into a book. Because when I was giving those speeches to those children and explaining to them that, you know, the whole trauma effect, and it was it was such an incredible journey for them to say, you're right, I do feel that. I do feel that person, and it does bring me down. And if you can do it, I can do it, yep, type of situation. And so the book would perpetuate that message, but it is a painful
experience. I want our listeners to know that, because we deal a lot with people that have suffered extreme abuse in their backgrounds. And, you know, a lot of the people that we work with that are still helping children have suffered extreme abuse in their backgrounds. And it's a hard place to go back to. It's different to go back into a valley to rescue someone. It's different when you have to go back in and account details that happened to you. Mm-hmm. And by exposing yourself, it recreates the pain. It's what a lot of our victims have to suffer when they go to court and right, have to testify against an abuser. And the only thing I can say is that we, as a community, would really appreciate that bravery. And I think by reliving the pain under those circumstances, I think too many people go back and become victims again in right, their own minds, mm-hmm, right? And that's a circle that they keep going back to, and that's not you. So for you to have overcome that and you're out of the valley by writing a book, you're having to go back into the darkness and almost relive it. And so that somebody else who is living it now can find the courage to climb out, and that takes extreme bravery.
Well, I turned 57 last week, and as you can see, 57 years later, it is still a very painful story to tell.
No, and we're so thankful that you're here sharing it. We don't want to minimize the fact that it's hard.
Yeah.
But I know that there's somebody listening to this and someone who would read a book like that that is on the brink of not wanting to continue to the next step. And maybe it's a younger person. But you know what I find, too? A lot of people in their 30s and 40s that now their mind allows them to remember things that they have truly tucked and blocked out,
right,
find themselves in severe depression. What would you say to them or to the young person that's living through it now?
That it's a temporary state. It's never a perpetual state. The Christmas is a hard time for me. Birthdays are a hard time for me because those traditional memories that you have of growing up in a family and having a full Christmas and a Christmas tree, or having, you know, when you're a foster kid, you don't have the ability to develop traditions because you're moving from foster home to foster home, or you're not. Sometimes, I know certainly not in the case of your children, but sometimes you're not really part of that family.
Right.
And so all of those traditions I had to create for myself, and I'm adamant about them for my children's sake. So you don't have traditional memories that other people have. I don't. You know, first day of school pictures, graduation pictures, that type of thing, you just don't have. That's not within your wheelbox to be able to recall. But it's always temporary because the next best thing comes along. Well, maybe I don't have traditional Christmas memories, but I can make my own.
You bet.
Maybe I don't have traditional birthday memories, but I can make my own, and I can make those for my children, and I can make those for my husband, and I can do wonderful things for the people in my office. And so if you remember, whatever it is that you're feeling now, this too shall pass.
It shall.
Yes.
You know, what a privilege it is to have you here.
Thank you.
What's the next step for you? I understand you're going to run for president.
Oh, goodness.
No, I talked to Hal. He said he assured me that our next president would be Cheryl.
Well, I'll tell you what my goal is. I love practicing law, and which is an odd thing because I think it's a unique position to be in, to love what you do. They always say, you know, find something that you love to do and you'll never have a job for the rest of your life. I love representing children. I love representing families. I love being a lawyer. My ultimate goal is I want to write that book and multiple other books, and I want to teach.
Good.
I used to teach, I taught in the paralegal program at Eastern in Roswell for 10 years, and I loved it because I love being able to share. You know, my history is not the only thing that I have to share. And recognizing that my trauma and my recovery from trauma is not the only thing I have to share was really eye-opening for me because I'm good at teaching. And I'm good at sharing, and I'm good at mentoring, and I'm good at engaging people and getting people revved up to work on a project. Those are the things that I can recognize in myself that I'm good at. So I'm going to take, I'm going to do the things that are painful, but I'm also going to do the things that I know that I'm good at and that I can make a life out of. One of the things that I have found significant about people who are trauma survivors is that we tend to be a little bit of workaholics. And I want to give to the community, and I want to work my brain for as long as my brain will allow. I'm not the type of person, I don't want to retire. If I write books until I'm 80, that would be the best day of my life.
When I was when my kids are little, I suffer from severe dyslexia. I have about a third or fourth grade public school reading level to this day, and I just finished my first children's book. I used to tell my kids stories when they were kids, and it turned into a young adult book with over 100,000 words.
Awesome!
I just hired an editor, but that's kind of a dream of mine. I'm now pursuing the things that I didn't have time for prior.
Excellent.
And how exciting that is. So listen, if you could talk to the whole world, everyone, right now, like my podcast blew up and was in the minds of everybody, what would you tell the world? From the rich of the rich to the poor of the poor. Wisdom from Cheryl.
I would say that whatever is in your mind that you feel is holding you back, whether it's trauma-related, relationship-related, parent-related, employment related, it is incredibly temporary, and that you have the ability to decide what your future looks like. And if you find yourself in a place where you feel like you're diving into a deep dark hole that you're never going to come out of, you're in control of that hole. You created that hole. You created the parameters of that hole. You created the depth of that hole. You get to decide that that hole no longer exists and get yourself the heck out.
And that's even if somebody else was the perpetrator. How you keep yourself in a hole is your choice.
That's right. When you allow somebody else, a perpetrator, to define your life, then you're just allowing them to continue to perpetrate on you your entire life. And you just decide. I could be incredibly angry. I could be incredibly angry at my parents, at other members of my family. I could be incredibly angry at the world and society. I could say, I could, in fact, if I had not suffered the trauma that I had suffered, I could be president by now. But I have never done that. I have always taken responsibility for myself. I have always given grace to people who suffered before me. And I have always just made the decision that I get to decide. I get to decide who I am and where I'm going.
That's so good. So listeners, if you ever find yourself in a dark place, I really want you to put yourself in. There are so many people that have gone through trauma in severe times. And if I'm hearing you right, from the voice of this lioness, right, it's up to you to climb out.
Absolutely. You are in control of your own life, your own mindset.
I also want to encourage people, there was that person, and tell me the counselor's name again.
Brian Hodges.
Now, you can be a Brian Hodges. You can reach into the life of somebody and make that sacrifice, and Cheryl is a testimony of what that kind of small sacrifice can mean for the life of someone such as yourself. And just be the neighbor that God wants you to be and the person that God wants you to be. That's amazing. What a great story.
You know, the thing is, saw something in me and he believed in me. And it took such very little effort to, you know, to believe in a child. And he did that. And look at the result. I wish I could find him.
We're going to find him. Listen for our listeners. Where was he at?
I went to East Denver High School, right on Colfax Avenue.
So someone help us find this gentleman. That would be amazing. Leave us with something. Leave us with one more word of wisdom.
Only one?
Oh, you can leave us with a bunch.
Well, my goal in life is always to create an environment for myself where I can give back. I really, I encourage my family, I encourage my friends, I encourage the people that I work with, is that we have a higher responsibility to this world than to just take care of ourselves. Mm. You cannot come into this world and just mind yourself. You have a greater responsibility to help the kid next door, to help the elderly lady down the street, to help the person at the grocery store, to be a part of the organization, be a part of Big Brothers Big Sisters, be a part of Upward Bound, volunteer at your local retirement agency. If you are just living your life and minding your business, you are not a member of this. You are not a contributing member of this society. You have so much more to give. Not only do you have it, but you have a responsibility to do it. And I make my husband be involved in everything that I'm involved in, and he very happily follows me. My children, I was a Rotarian for years. My children know Rotary better than anybody that you could possibly imagine. And doing your wife's podcast, doing your video cast, this is me giving back every single day.
That's awesome. You know what they say, though, is when you take the focus off of yourself, because when you focus on yourself, you're really doing a comparison to everyone else. And you take it off of yourself and you pour into that community or into that child or into that cause, mm-hmm. that it changes. It takes the focus off of you and allows you to be much happier, more joyful, more satisfied in life by pouring into others. And it's you can only be so filled. You know, there's a point where it's time, if you don't pour out, that you have no more room for others to pour into you. And I find the more that I reach out to our community and doing the things that we do, that's my happy place. I would travel. If I was a billionaire, I'd be broke in a year, because I would just travel. And man, there are so many people that just need a hand up. Just a hand up. Just stick your hand up and bring them up like they did you. And that's what you're doing with your life. So, you know.
And I'm not talking about the people on the corner who are soliciting money.
Oh,
I'm
no.
I'm talking about people within your inner circle, people within your employment circle, people within your church circle, people within your neighborhood.
What a great point. Yeah, you know, they're everywhere too. Don't assume because of the outside of someone. Something else I got from you is we can't assume that people aren't suffering or in pain because of the way they look. Now, fortunately for you, you came out a victor. So people don't know that you standing in a place of victory came out of a place of pain. But there are people that act like they're in a place of victory that are still in a place of pain. So what you're saying too is we should never judge that book.
That's right, because people project what they want you to see. And if you didn't know me, Clay, and you didn't know my history, you would just think that I was your average, normal kid who grew up.
Cheryl, you would never be average. You're doing so many things in our community. We don't have average people on this show.
Well, thank you.
So, hey, Hal. So just so you know, she has her attorney present during this entire podcast. Do you want to say anything?
I love your turn of a phrase. You have a choice. You can be the victim or you can be the victor.
And that is the end of the podcast. We want to thank Cheryl and for Hal for just taking time out of their day to pour into the lives of the Voice of the Lion listeners.
Thank you for having me.
Today's podcast was brought to you by an ethical breeder of doodles, Desert Sage Doodles, where they bring you more than a pet. They bring you a companion and part of the family. Listen, check them out. Go to DesertSageDoodles.com.